Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out before we begin to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout-out and thank you to all the awesome people who supported me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So a huge thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. Today's episode of the podcast is going to be talking about the content creator effect of playing EDH. Effectively, what we're going to be talking about is the difference between playing EDH on a game stream, usually through Twitch or some other similar outlet, versus sitting down and playing a regular EDH or CDH game in your local playgroup or at a local game store. But it's not going to be me today just talking to you like I'm talking to a wall. I've got some amazing guests lined up, so let's meet them. So first and foremost, I'd like to introduce someone who hasn't been on the show for quite a while, but it's great to have back, reintroducing Andy from the Guardian Project podcast. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. It has been. It's been a little while, and I'm really excited to be here. The last time we were here, we had a great conversation. So I'm excited to talk about playing Commander on streams.
Oh yeah, totally. But before we get to the rest of that, do you want to pitch the Guardian Project real quick?
I sure do. I am one half of the Guardian Project podcast. We are a weekly Commander podcast that talks about all things Magic the Gathering, but mostly Commander. You can find us anywhere where you listen to podcasts. You can check us out on our website, guardianprojectpodcast.com. And you can find us on YouTube as well. We post all of our Twitch gameplay to our YouTube channel. So you can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheGuardianProject. And really, if you just Google The Guardian Project Podcast, you'll find all of our content. And then I personally am on Twitter at ATFloor. I'm sorry, it's not ATFloor anymore. I changed it. It's at AndyFlory. Since the last time I was on, I changed my handle so people knew who I was. So if you want to chat with me directly, I am on Twitter at AndyFlory.
Awesome, awesome. And you guys just restarted streaming just a couple weeks ago, right?
We did. So we took a pretty big hiatus, and we came back towards the beginning of this year, and we are streaming every other Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Awesome, awesome. Definitely be on the lookout for that, and I will be putting those links in the description for this episode, so definitely check them out. And our second guest for today is another returning guest, but it hasn't been as long since he was last here. So without further ado,
it's been exactly a week. They don't know that though.
Oh yeah, exactly. So reintroducing again, a man who doesn't need any introduction, apparently, community personality and editor EK. Welcome back.
What's up? I did my own introduction because you made such a big effort to say, I'm very in control of my intro. I do my thing. I was like, no, I'm going to go out of my way to mess this up and see what happens.
Dude.
I'm here to cause chaos.
Dude. Oh, yeah. So,
How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Again, where can people find all the cool stuff that you're up to these days?
Literally everywhere on the internet at EK Plays Cards. But most importantly, I edit the show Casual Magic with Shivam Bhatt, which is a video and audio podcast featuring Commander Advisory Group member and Commander Luminary Shivam Bhatt. And that's been the major time sink of all of my content lately. So you should check that out because the interviews are fantastic.
Oh, definitely. For sure. For sure. Shivam has a lot of great guests on there. And it's definitely a good listen for sure. I mean, you know, I'm going to say I'm a little bit impartial. You should be listening to my episode. But the fact is, you're already listening to my episode. So I guess I kind of won that equation. So, yeah. But after that, definitely listen to Casual Magic. Anyway, gents. So today's episode, as I said at the top of the show, is going to be about the content creator meta. Or I guess if we want to put it another way, the content creator effect. Effectively, if we want to try to break that down in broad stroke terms here, we're kind of talking about how we as content creators play and build our decks differently for game streams that you will be seeing on Twitch or similar platforms versus games that we and decks that we might be using, you know, again, in our local play group or at an LGS or some sort of commander event when those do eventually return more en masse. And again, you and I were talking about this the other week, EK, and I thought, you know, this is the kind of episode that we as content creators always kind of talk about in passing, but we don't really ever have an episode just directly about it. We never truly address this topic. So I think that today's episode is going to be really cool because I've got you two on here. Y'all have great thoughts about this sort of effect. I have my own thoughts about this as a quite frequent stream guest. And the listeners out there, this episode is for you because hopefully it'll explain a few things about our reasoning and our rationale and why we really enjoy playing on stream like we do. So anywho, so since EK, you were the one who originally came up with this idea, how about you start us off here? How would you define the content creator meta in your own words?
So the content creator meta is very easy to explain, but it's very difficult to kind of explain to people who just aren't aware of it. So essentially it boils down to we're playing to entertain rather than playing for ourselves. Like, we're there for the viewers and we're there for the content and our personal enjoyment, while that's at the forefront, like at the end of the day, we're not going to be there if we're not going to enjoy ourselves, but we're going to put the enjoyment of the table above the enjoyment, above our individual enjoyment of the game. I think that's the easiest way to word it.
Oh yeah, and again, EDH is an extremely social format, so you're effectively saying that when we go on a game stream, we're basically putting, I guess, the social aspect, the interactiveness of the four-player multiplayer concept, sometimes, again, I'm not going to say always, but sometimes ahead of the more optimal play that we could make.
Well, and it's funny, because I always say a good EDH stream or a good, like, kind of chummy EDH video, the game is secondary in a lot of cases, especially for a live stream, because you're going there to hang out with people.
Exactly. You're there for the personalities and the folks that are there. If they're having fun and their interactions are showing you what type of commander game that you want to play, that's really a win from a commander content creator perspective. So we tend to err on the side of a more splashy play, playing wacky cards, less, maybe even less popular commanders, ones that are not the splashiest, easiest to build around, not seen on the big screen with some of the major content creators. And I think those are the decks that people like to look for. And the things that we certainly get asked to do more often is to play certain decks that might not be in the limelight as often.
For sure, for sure. I know that listeners of my podcast have been just deluged with me talking about my signature decks, and I definitely can attest to the power of the content creator meta for how I built a lot of my decks. I like building things that are different, building commanders that people have never heard of or have never really seen work in a particular way, and that's definitely been part of what I've gotten into. But enough about talking about me. I think it's perfect right now to... So Andy, how about you kind of start us off? What are some of the differences you think in your own collection there are between decks you'd play on stream more often and then decks you might not play on stream so often?
Sure. So I think one of the most important things that we look at is as new sets come out, we take a look at commanders that we think are fun, but we certainly have a time limit that we're dealing with on stream. We like to make sure that in the 3 hours that we're streaming, we can get two games in, and games that have a way to actually wrap up, and that we're not playing 1 2-hour game and then one rapid game in like 45 minutes just to get it in on stream. And I think that I have a good volume of decks, I guess, or variety of decks that have different power levels, because we need to make sure that we can accommodate the viewer for all sorts of experiences, but we also have to make sure that they're going to play well on stream. So there are certain decks that I do play that I think people would really like, you know, from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. I just built Satsuki the Living Lore, which is the green-white Sagas deck, which is not getting a ton of love. There isn't a ton of content on Satsuki. And I had a really great stream where I got to kind of show off what it can do. And then I have other decks that I don't play as often. I have a Jota Archmage Eternal deck that is a five-color Super Friends deck, so I'm playing a bunch of Planeswalkers. And I tend to avoid decks like that on my own stream because you tend to watch one person play the game for a lot longer period of time. And since we don't have the magic of editing when you're playing on a live stream, you tend to not interest everybody when one person's taking a 20-minute turn compared to a few people taking, you know, 3 to 4 minute turns. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've noticed is I tend to play decks that can do some fun things but aren't going to monopolize the stream.
It's possible to do fun things, and I mean that's why we're doing it in the first place. But a lot of times it's fun things in compact packages. It's
sure.
Not necessarily like Oracle Consultation all day long,
right?
But it's like, you know, like one of my favorite cards is Apex Devastator, and it's 10 mana 10/10 that cascades 4 times.
Yeah,
like, it's things like that. Like a lot of stuff is happening, but it's happening very quickly, and it's easy to follow.
Correct.
I think that's a big thing too. With so much stuff going on the stream and in chat and everything, the easier a game is to follow, the more engaged an audience is going to be as well. And they're not going to be engaged if they're watching, you know, Urza or Brea, you know, kind of twiddle its wheels for half an hour at a time. You know, you're going to lose interest. They're just going to go to a different stream.
Exactly. And knowing my personal decks, some of my signature decks are Noyandar Royal Shaper or Niambia Steam Speaker as a self-proclaimed blue-white control player, which is not everybody's favorite thing to hear when they're sitting down at a table to play a game of Commander with me. You know, I tend to avoid also playing those decks too frequently on my stream, and I may not even bring them onto another stream because as we have our pregame chats and we want to make sure that we are level setting our expectations. My Noyandar deck is known for having a pretty large amount of counter spells and for having near 10 cards that bounce all non-land permanents back to their owner's hands. So Cyclonic Rift gets a lot of hate for being a boogeyman of the format, although it is a necessary evil in some decks to keep them in the game. I understand it's not always fun to watch one person continuously bounce the board. And then Niambia Steam Speaker reanimates some pretty strong legendary creatures, and not everybody wants to play against Jyn Gataxias, new or old.
Oof.
No one wants either, really. Although I love seeing it. I do love to play a Jyn Gataxias or an Elish Norn or, you know, an Azor. But they're fun, splashy cards, so it's really fun to play those decks on stream. It's just you have to deal with them in moderation.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you bring up, you know, counter spells and removal in particular, because mm-hmm. I think that not only is that like just like a content creator thing, like it, you know, the next time you go watch a stream, count how many pieces of removal are fired off in an entire game. But not only do that, but like go watch an episode of Game Nights as well. You know, it's around the same. You're not really going to see Wraths. You're not really going to see Edict effects, things like that in a content creator game, because they, you know, you want to see that like amassed board state and that critical
right.
mass sort of thing. Whereas, you know, if I'm playing at my local game store, like, yeah, I'm running Dictated Erebos. Yeah, I'm going to run Damnation and, you know, Vanquish the Horde or something like that. You know, it's just inherently different. It's not fun to watch Wraths dot deck. I think that's the simplest way to put it.
I agree. And even in games where I'm not playing off stream, I'm seeing board wipes being played maybe even more less often now because people want to do the thing that their deck does.
Yeah.
And I think it's just fun to see it that way. And I can appreciate it. But I think some games are ending sooner because we're seeing less board wipes. And that might be why folks that watch streams for the Guardian Project podcast My co-host tracks the number of turns that have passed in his games when we track all of our games. And we have identified so far that the average game on our stream has gone till turn 8, which seems like it's really early, but that's about an hour and 15 to an hour and 30 minutes. Granted, yeah. We're chatting with folks that are in chat. We're making decisions. We're playing fun, splashy plays, so maybe not always the most optimal. You know, I don't want to bounce everything, like I said, with the Cyclonic Rift. I don't always want to counter the one card that's going to kind of maybe wreck my board. But an 8-turn game is an hour and a half, potentially. And I think that that's a really good amount of time that we like to play the game. But, you know, there's a lot of people that want to play till turn 12. It's something where we just have to make sure that we've got the time to do that on stream.
And you kind of think about it, too. You know, those first 3 or 4 turns, you know, you're taking your turn in about a minute and a half at most. Because a lot of times it's just like play a land, play a piece of ramp, play a land, play a creature.
Right.
You know, the majority of the time is spent on those last like 2 or 3 turns of the
exactly.
game.
Exactly.
Yeah, you guys bring up some very interesting points on that one. And it's something that I can definitely echo in my own games. Like the stream I was on last night, I had the ability to play with good friends Logan, Seraph Six, Chris the Commander Mechanic, and Clayby over on Olivia Gobert Hicks's stream. And we had a lot of fun just kind of, you know, doing our own thing. For game one, all of our decks went off. I killed a player with a 30-30 Esper Sentinel that I had equipped with just amazing equipment. But, you know, it's the idea that we're playing for the audience first and we're playing for ourselves second. And I think that's the biggest difference with the content game is, again, as we said at the top of the show, we want to make sure that this is entertainment. I mean, you could easily spend your time doing 100 other things, but you are tuning in, if you're a Twitch viewer, let's say, to a game stream for a reason. And we as streamers and we as the content players want to make sure that that game is engaging and fun while we're still doing really cool stuff. And we are making some changes. Like, for instance, I lost that particular game. I'd been sitting on a board wipe for about 6 turns. I could have used it for, I don't know, like 3 different times, but I decided to, one, strategically allow that game to continue developing because it would help me if my opponents got bopped in the face by a whole bunch of flying zombies, but also just because, from my own experience, sometimes the board wipe, which may seem like the best play at the time to keep yourself from, you know, not dying, might also just prolong the game unnecessarily too. And when we want to try to get especially 2 games in on streams, we want to make sure that we have time to shuffle up and play again, especially if we have that knowledge, that inkling feeling that we're probably not going to win the game. Sometimes it's easier just to pack it in a little bit and try to play for game 2, if nothing else.
And I think another item that or another topic that relates to what you were just saying there is we want to be able to play 2 games. And so making sure that our decks have ways to win other than just through combat damage is something that we prioritize pretty heavily. Yeah, it's a thing. Can you believe that?
Because I certainly don't.
Get out of here, Andy. Get out of here.
You know what? You know, as a combo player, but someone who just wins off of alternate win cons, you know, when you're starting to get towards the end of the game and maybe your board was wiped, you know, or maybe you just kind of got out the gate real slow and you do need to wipe the board, you know, cards like Approach of the Second Sun, those are actually totally healthy cards. Games gotta end.
There's something to be said about that too. The alternate win cons tend to be suspenseful. They build drama. They have a narrative to it. Because at the end of the day, like, when you're on a stream and you're entertaining, you're storytelling. And a card like Approach of the Second Sun or a card like Primal Surge tells a story. You know, like, there is an inevitability to the game, and it's how are these personalities going to navigate their way through or to the inevitability. And there are a lot of people that find that kind of narrative or that kind of storytelling compelling. And that's why they tune in.
Exactly. People in, you know, in the chat or watching, even in the game, it's always fun to go, Has that person drawn two cards or have they drawn three cards? Oh my gosh, is Approach on top now? Is it one away? You know, you play a card like Azor's Elocutors where you just need to not take damage for five or more turns so that you can get enough filibuster counters on it to win the game, or playing a Biovisionary and making sure that you get four more creatures named Biovisionary.
Revel in Riches too, something like that.
Exactly, those cards, Felidar Sovereign for the life gain deck, those are really cool. I think the ones that you know, EK, you mentioned, not all games have to win off of a Thassa's Oracle, but I still do enjoy seeing a good Lab Maniac win when you're playing against a mill deck, or the good old Maze's End that took so much work for someone to get 10 lands out, you know? So I tend to put at least one of those in all of my decks. I have always suggested this. It is absolutely not a requirement, but I like to see when somebody's mechanized production hits the number of cards that they have. It's eight or more artifacts with the same name. You know, I like to see those. I like to see a Simic Ascendancy hit 20 or more growth counters on it. So those types of things are fun on stream.
And it's not just like the win cons too. It's like the general achievement unlocked sort of stuff. Like, I feel like you see Brazella melded on stream more than you would playing in person at your local store. Local store or Shaun of the Forgotten Ways doing its formidable biorhythm thing.
Yeah.
See that more on streams too.
Exactly. And those are fun to do because not only did you get to do it, but it's fun as the player to meld Brazella. You have a ginormous angel horror now, or winning my most recent alternate win con, which is one that I think people are more agreeable to play against. It might not be as you know, maybe a feel bad, because I think people feel bad losing to cards like Thassa's Oracle and maybe even Jace Wielder of Mysteries. But Strixhaven Stadium, it's a rock. It costs three. It's fantastic in Commander. And it's got an alternate win con right on it.
Yeah. It's one of those cards, like, I genuinely think if you're playing a combat deck, it just should be in your deck.
It's just good. It fits everywhere.
I don't promote staples, but like that's just a cool card that if it was a staple, it'd be a cool staple.
You know, I like where you're going here with staples, because I think that we are on the same page. I think a lot of people talk about Commander decks needing a ton of staples. And I think part of the content creator meta, right, focusing on interactive games or maximizing fun, we like and gravitate towards, I'm using air quotes here, hipster decks, right? The decks that are not played as often, or let's go back and, you know, update a deck that has fallen out of the most popular favor. When I say fallen out of favor, there isn't a major meta. It's just we're getting so many new commanders every year. We take old decks apart and put new decks together. So going back to a commander that I have that I don't know many other people play is Lysolda the Blood Witch. It's one of the original Rakdos from Ravnica City of Guilds from the original Ravnica block, and it's a cool commander that lets you do things when you sack red or black creatures. So maybe bringing that back to the forefront, when you come to a stream, someone goes, "What is Lysolda? I don't even know what this commander is." So I also tend to play less staples and more, I guess, hipster cards or less known cards, because they really get a lot of really cool engagement. People love to see it.
Yeah, I feel the same way about like the big, the stuff in like the beer and eight drops meta. So like your Lurking Predators, your, Fevered Suspicion, like the big Stompy Timmy cards that either you just don't have enough time to play, or like it's always like that 101st card that you end up cutting. That 101st card that you end up cutting is like the content creator staple.
Right.
Because either you tried to make it work, or you went out of your way to make it work, or someone in chat is just like, "I've been trying to make that card work and I get to finally see it. And like, now I'm going to go out of my way and I'm going to make that. Like, I want to do that."
When you get the feedback that someone knew the deck would be a lot of fun, or they really enjoyed watching the stream, or they really enjoyed watching the video after you had posted it to YouTube, it's honestly the best feeling. And after playing my Satsuki deck, which is a Saga deck, I got feedback saying, I knew this deck would be fun. I'm so glad I see this. I'm really happy to see this somewhere online because we're not seeing it anywhere else. And that's what it's all about. It's just making sure that it's fun for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's always great to be able to play a commander that no one has ever heard of. So again, using my example from last night, at least as of the time of recording here, I pulled out one of my new favorite decks, Terranika, Crowan Veteran, and it's a mono-white deck that just loves to have tappable creatures that trigger off combat, and it's really fun to be able to kind of blow people's minds, because again, I spent a lot of time on these episodes talking about how mono-white is actually really good, and can be very good, and it's fun to see people's minds just blown about the silly things that you can do in a color that's supposedly the weakest. And just, you know, that's really what I try to do when I'm on stream, is just try to challenge assumptions, play cards people have never heard of, and just do silly things. Even if I am running some quote-unquote staple cards to make the whole engine run, they're not the only cards in there. For every arcane signet I'm running in that kind of deck, I'm running a bag of holding. That's a Coach J-Row special right there. So shout out to J-Row for that one. For every, you know, kind of board wipe I would normally run, I'm running Curter's Wrath, which if I have Threshold, I can get one spirit token or something. It's just some ridiculously weird board wipe back from Odyssey Block for 6 mana. So yeah, just silly cards like that that have what I always like to refer to as kind of a high ceiling but a low floor, I guess. Some kind of risky cards that are not safe to always play. They're not going to be the most flexible, but they're also the kind of thing where they turn. They're a head turner, I think, and you definitely see a lot more of those on streams than you would at a regular game.
Chance for Glory. Every deck that I run, or every deck that I have red and white, I am playing an extra turn spell that makes me lose the game if I don't win on that turn, because I love the drama. I love the suspense. It's one of those cards, like, you know, if you weren't paying attention to the game, if you were kind of just like hanging out or like had the stream on in the background, when you hear, I'm going to cast Chance for Glory, you tap whatever you're doing and you tune in and you get engaged. You're on the edge of your seat. And I think a lot of content creators, you know, they have their different cards that do that, but like everyone has them. Everyone has their couple of cards that they put in their decks that just instantly engage the viewers, but instantly engage the table as well. Because a big part of it is, you know, if the people who are playing the game are just, you know, kind of idly passing by and they're just kind of there, then people in chat are going to be incentivized to do the same thing. But if the people playing in the game are engaged, they're laughing, they're having a good time, then chat and, you know, the viewers after the fact are going to have a higher chance of doing the same thing as well.
Exactly. Playing those weird odd signature cards or those spicy cards are really fun. A card that comes to mind in my Noyandar Royal Shaper deck is Equinox. So it's an aura that is an enchant land, and it says you can tap the land to counter target spell if it would destroy a land you control. So with Noyandar, when you cast an instant or sorcery, you turn one of your creatures into an elemental and you put 3 counters on it. So anytime someone would board wipe or would single target destroy one of my animated creatures, I can tap my land to counter their spell. It's not played in very many decks, and it doesn't work very well in very many decks. It's like a signature of like a Noyandar deck. But you play an Equinox and someone goes, what even is this? It's a card that was printed in Legends a bajillion years ago. And it's very affordable. And if you're looking to play some, you know, wild cards, check out cards that are like ant lands. There's a lot of them, and some of them ramp, and they're very cool.
For sure, for sure. Always on the lookout for some of those, that brand new tech that's really old but really cool. It's always fun just looking through Scryfall, especially when I'm building a new deck, to try to find those it cards, you know, something that no one's ever going to expect, but something that just sneakily works. And those definitely become our, I think we as creators kind of become, I don't want to say pigeonholed, but kind of become defined in a way. Our style of play is defined by these cards that we play all the time. And I know, EK, you just mentioned Primal Surge and Chance for Glory. Like, those are your signature cards, right?
Near enough. I would say, like, Primal Surge is actually in a really weird spot when it comes to the, like, content creator sort of thing. Because it's a spell. It's a one-card combo that wins the game on the spot, usually.
I'm a big fan of it.
But like I said, you know, like I kind of said, it would have been 10, 15 minutes ago. It's all about the drama, the suspense. It's about the storyline and the narrative leading up to the Primal Surge rather than the Primal Surge resolving. You know, the people at the table know what they know what they're getting into, because a lot of times the rule, like the pregame discussions for content creators, are very in-depth. They're very defined as well. A lot of times, you know, you'll see a stream turn on and they'll get right into the game. But most of the time, they're showing up 10, 15, 20 minutes beforehand, and they're having a very detailed pregame discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, trying to craft the perfect game for the viewer to watch.
Yeah.
And Primal Surge is one of those cards you absolutely talk about, because it can just, if I have 10 mana, I can win the game at any time. Theoretically.
Yeah, I think it'd actually be really good to go through the content rule zero, or at least a hypothetical content rule zero versus a rule zero, or sitting down at a table with strangers at an LGS. How does the stream...
I think this is the big thing. This is the big point that we've been circling around the entire time.
Yeah, so let's just get right into it. So I want both of your opinions on how a rule zero on a game stream differs from a rule zero, or lack thereof, again, depending on what you can can't do at your local LGS, let's say. How is a stream game effectively different than setting up just an in-person or just a random online game?
So I think one of the biggest differences, and one of the things that we have started doing a little differently, is instead of trying to fit our deck's power level into some power level numbers that were utilized a few years ago as a good starting point.
They're archaic in the first place.
They definitely weren't
doing any favors.
They were doing
a good job.
They were exactly
where you want to be.
Yeah, they were a starting point for some folks just to get something, right? Something on the board about what a power level would be. So we have started actually starting with how long of a game does your deck play. So, you know, some people like to ask, what turn can you consistently win on? And I don't know that for every single one of my decks. I don't think I know very many folks that could say I can always consistently win on turn X. But I do know that my deck usually takes an hour and 20 minutes, or my deck could do it in 45 minutes. What power level is 45 minutes? Well, it's pretty high. But I can also say that some of the more competitive games that I've joined on CEDH streams have taken over 2 hours, because someone didn't find a win con, or someone's win con got countered. So for our streams, we start up by discussing how long a deck would take to win a game, right? So ultimately we want it to end around an hour and a half. Hour 45 minutes is totally fine. And then we know we have to play maybe a quicker game in the beginning, but we ask a lot of questions, and we actually modeled a lot of ours around Rachel Weeks from Commander Sphere. And there were a lot of questions that had been posted, things like, how many tutors do you have in your deck? How many cards are you playing that are considered fast mana? So zero, maybe even one. How many alternate win cons are you running? And how many two card combos do you have? So, you know, once we were able to start filling out those small little, you know, questionnaires, we had a much better idea of whether or not the decks fit the build. But finally, if someone was playing a deck like a Sir Conrad that focuses solely on the graveyard and manipulating it and milling and you know, things like that and reanimating, we probably don't want to play a mill deck against it. Not that we're metagaming, but that it will create a majorly skewed game in potential favor of one player. So we also try to take a look at the deck theme and strategy to make sure that they all really do mic up. We don't want someone to be playing, you know, something that's going to constantly remove counters or board wipe every three turns against somebody who's playing, you know, a deck that has 36 creatures and it's tribal something, you know? So that's how we have been dealing with our pregame chats. And it has been very, very successful for us.
I think that's perfect. Like that's how I tend to do it. That's how I know Chase mostly does it as well. Mm-hmm. What I will add is there's certain types of cards that you just won't see very often in general anyways. Like you're not really going to see a Blood Moon or a Contamination or like hard stacks.
Back to Basics, Stasis, yeah, Winter Orb, those cards.
It slows the game down.
Sure.
You know, the game, in the words of in the words of Jim LePage from the Spike Theaters, it is getting late. The game has to end. And there's just the cards that say the game's got to end are going to be more proactive than something that's just going to slug or bog down the table. I mean, you're really not going to see those. And I don't want to say that's all like a hard and fast universal rule, but like, it's just something that no one's had to have a discussion about, yet we're all on the same page about it.
Exactly. And I think there's also far less of a meta in the Commander content creator streaming sphere, and maybe even less so in just the general public playing Commander, because there are so many varieties of commanders and strategies and cards to play at this point that there's no card that is just going to lock down a major pod. And so playing cards that create like major advantages for one person or potentially create major setbacks maybe for other players are the cards that we tend to look at. And I think they just create for, you know, memorable plays and people will remember it. They'll want to add it to their deck. They'll want to ask questions. They'll engage. You know, one that kind of comes to mind for me is a Confounding Conundrum. It's a card. It's an enchantment. When it enters, you draw a card. But it says whenever a land enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, if they already had one enter, they have to return one to their hand. So it kind of stops major land ramp strategies, which kind of keeps the game all on par if you're playing against somebody who's just ramping, and then is going to play a Craterhoof. We've seen it happen. Craterhoof is a fantastic card. The strategy is great. Landfall is real. But playing Confounding Conundrum makes people think about how they're going to play the game differently, and then you might see a different strategy come out of that deck.
Yeah. And all of this is to say that, like, you know, if you know, you're on a CDH stream, CDH is CDH. This leans more like that, like more social kind of non-CDH
sort. For sure.
A CDH stream or a CDH video is going to be CDH. No holds bars. You know what you're getting yourself into. The viewer knows what they're getting themselves into. You know, the Blood Moons, the Rule of Laws, everything like that on the table. But that's the kind of stuff that you're really not going to see anywhere else. And it's the kind of stuff that gets talked about before the game as well. A little bit more than it otherwise would be.
Sure.
Yeah, because again, we have all this discourse about why a lot of people don't particularly like playing against, say, stacks decks, whereas in CDH you are encouraged to play them. You're going to because the expectations are different, and that's what's really cool about playing CDH in particular. And it's actually, sorry, yes,
the expectation is, you know, I'm going to try and win, whereas, you know, somewhere else, the expectation is I want to do something cool. I want you to do something cool. And there is an inherent difference between the two.
For sure. So this actually reminded me of another question that I, again, got from last night's stream that I participated on. And that is how we as players will basically approach being, I'm going to put this in scare quotes, the threat. So again, this may happen a little bit differently at an LGS, let's say, versus online. But how would both of you describe the differences of playing on stream and basically becoming a threat for the table that if not, or if left unchecked, will or get to a commanding board state? Do we as content creators try to telegraph these plays a little bit? I've noticed that we love saying, well, this something like, well, this will make me the threat, or this seems fun, or just, you know, like we love telegraphing our plays because we're entertaining. But I'm just curious, what do you guys think about basically trying to become the threat? And do we pull our punches sometimes?
I would say that, like, more often, I don't want to say more often than not, but like everyone who's played on a stream with the explicit intent of entertaining has pulled a punch at some point. That I have no doubt in my mind that someone, if not everyone, has pulled a punch. At the end of the day, you're there to have fun. You want everyone else to have fun, and you want everyone else to do their thing. And if I'm just burying, you know, if I can kill a player on turn six, I either better be doing it in like the most ridiculous, like awesome, cool way possible, or not at all.
Exactly. I think it's fun to play to the arch enemy theme that you are the big baddie with the play coming that's gonna change
the
game.
Thing.
It is. It really is, you know. But there's an upside and there's a downside to it. You know, as a self-proclaimed combo player, presenting a combo that can both win the game or just really affect the game state if you don't go through with it has both upsides and downsides. You know, I have a Minsk Beloved Ranger deck, which is a Naya deck that creates Boo, the adorable hamster, but that's not really why I played it. I played it because Minsk can pay X, and until end of turn, target creature that you control becomes base power toughness XX. So it's a deck that steals opponent's creatures, and then I pay zero, and then I essentially wipe the board. So I'm taking out their biggest threats by essentially making it a 0/0. And I have before played a combo in the deck that I use as a reason to board wipe. So Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker and a Coercive Recruiter. It's an infinite combat where I can make infinite Coercive Recruiters, steal all of my opponent's creatures, and swing with haste. But I didn't want to do that. I did it because I could steal all my opponent's creatures and then use Minsk to wipe the board and then just stop. And we've seen before where you made yourself the threat, you presented an infinite combo, but you didn't do it to just end the game. So like EK, you said, either I'm going to do it and it's going to be wacky, or you're not going to do it at all. And so for this combo, I run it as a board wipe so that I can in fact make a big play. But then you see folks that might have said, well, I don't know why the game kept going because you presented a win. So it's a fine line you have to walk when you do make yourself the arch enemy if you aren't going to wrap the game up.
And that's another thing that gets talked about in a pregame discussion. It's like, you know, if you have it, do you go for it? And so, you know, sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes the answer is no. Especially if you're trying to keep to that like 70 to 80 minute sort of time limit, quote unquote, for a game, you're definitely a little bit more encouraged to just go for it because, oh, like we'll just play a second game. It's cool.
Right.
But, yeah. If you're like 2 hours into a game,
wrap it up.
You're not, game's got to end. You know, you're not
game's
just
gotta end.
Do something big and stop.
Exactly. So, you know, presenting that. And then the best part about that whole play was that the next turn I decided not to remove my Coercive Recruiter. So I had an option to maybe wrap the game up another turn. My Kiki Jiki and Coercive Recruiter got stolen and then someone else went infinite. And that was an even better play. So I'm glad I just used it as a board wipe.
All right. So yeah, we've had a great discussion about this, and I think that everything we've talked about for the last half hour really lends to this final question. Hopefully we can talk about this for a few minutes here. And I think that question is, why is the content creator meta important? Why should the folks out there listening to this episode or people who watch game streams care about the content creator meta?
I mean, simply put, you know, engaged Magic players are going to consume content, and they're going to either model their decks after, or they're going to try new things and explore new things because they've seen it before. It's probably, I would very easily say you're more often than not consuming Commander content than playing Commander. So it's just, it's the brand of Commander that you're around the most. So I feel like, you know, it's good to be invested in that, because if you didn't enjoy it, you wouldn't be spending your time consuming it.
I 100% agree. I think it's fun to consume what it is that you would like to try to play. I also think that I watch other people's streams, not even just my own, and videos on YouTube and actually produced content as well that isn't just streams. And it makes me want to play that. It makes me want to expand out into strategies I don't typically play. And I think that is really the fun of it, is making the community part of what you do outside of just streams.
For sure. And now that I think about it, I guess there is one question. I guess I lied on that one. There is one final question.
I want a refund, MJ.
Oh, come on, EK, don't do that. But yeah, now that I think about it, when we do eventually start having events again, hopefully in person, whether it's an SCG con or whether it's a Wizards affiliated or just something completely different entirely, like a Marchesa, which by the time this episode has been released has probably already passed, but again, an independent event. And how does the content creator meta really hold up when we start going, when we start getting off Twitch and we actually start getting together in person, hopefully? Do you guys think that some of those meta choices that you've made over the last couple of years on your own streams will kind of guide how you play your decks? Or do you think that the way you play or in the decks you play are going to kind of resort more towards what we've defined as maybe more of an LGS, kind of an open meta where more things might happen? I'm just curious to know.
I will say that I, going back to the LGS, now that we are coming out of some of our COVID restrictions, and we have the ability to actually see people in person again, the meta has not changed as much as I honestly thought it would. At my LGS, there are far fewer new Commander decks. And one thing to keep in mind as a content creator, where I'm constantly making new decks, I might make, you know, a few decks every quarter. That is not the case, I think, for most players at the LGS. We do play a game that can be expensive, can also be absolutely played on a budget and still pack a punch. But I will say that I have seen more decks going back to my LGS that I remember seeing pre-pandemic than newer decks. Just that people are more invested in those decks. So I think the way that I play online and on streams is I will say, significantly different than maybe the way that I would build a deck to play in person. Although I am seeing a significant change in the way that we have pre-game chats at the LGS. And I think one other thing to keep in mind is, if your LGS has prizes associated with winning a game of Commander, it also further changes the pregame chat that you would have. I have an LGS that has a Commander League, and I have an LGS that has a Sunday afternoon Commander, that if you win the game, you earn $10 store credit. So you certainly see some stronger decks come out because people utilize that to earn store credits so that they can maybe upgrade their decks in the future. When you have something like that is playing an additional factor, you definitely have different pregame chats. So I do think, in my experience, that the way that I play off stream is pretty different than the way that I play on stream.
I'm glad you went first because I don't really have a good answer to that. Because frankly,
Sure.
the last like 3 years at this point, you and like Andy Zupke and people like that, literally the only people that I have played Paper Magic with.
Sure.
So I'm playing Paper Magic with other content creators, playing their content creator decks. So I don't have a good answer for that.
Sure.
But From my experience, like playing in person, playing everything like that, like I'm not going to change the way I build my decks. I enjoy the way that I build my decks, and I enjoy the way that they play. And frankly, I don't see a need to change the way I do that because I don't know if that's going to change the way I enjoy the game. I enjoy it as is, so I'm not going to hamper my own fun in a way that is like detrimental to my overall enjoyment. You know, obviously you have to take into account the other people that you're playing with, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to speak in quickly edgewise here on my own experience is I have spent a lot of time over the last couple years building just a variety of decks at different levels, different abilities, different funky things that I've tried out. And when going back to the LGS or playing in person or even playing with my normal play group, there are certain decks that kind of get left behind in that shuffle. Is they were either built for a specific purpose, they were built for a specific meta. I'm going to call out my white bordered exclusive deck that I played for a stream last year with some friends of the show. Where it was just white border cards. I have talked about that in a previous episode. If you want to check that out, definitely listen to that. Or one of the decks that I love talking about all the time, Colorless Najeela. That deck is not going to fly at the majority of LGS games from my experience because it doesn't do what people expect. And, you know, if you're just picking up a game with people who you don't know, it's a lot more difficult to say, hey, this deck is not doing the typical Najeela thing. It's doing XYZ very differently. And, you know, sometimes that can get lost in translation, I think, in an LGS versus in the content creator meta. It's, hey, that's a really cool thing you got there, MJ. Let's try to work around that if you really want to play that. So, again,
in a content creator meta than there is at a game store meta.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is definitely for sure, because I could easily name like a half a dozen decks that I have where whenever I would go to an LGS, I'm just going to leave them at home because for one reason or another, they are just not going to be viable. I am going to basically be wasting my time if I play them. My opponents probably won't appreciate that I'm playing something that probably is much less. And again, this is not to say anything is right or wrong here. I want to reiterate that Rule Zero, again, is extremely important on here. But most of the time in my experience, you're probably not going to find a lot of people who want to play against more of a theme deck. So against my Najeela deck, it's just not going to work. They would rather see me try to really play the deck that people expect. And for better or for worse, I will typically leave Najeela home for that kind of case, and I will take decks that I feel more confident in that can scale up or scale down a lot better. And basically have to think about how I'm looking at this too. Is it's a completely different experience, completely different meta. You may not have, like you guys said, the trust factor with the people at the LGS or on a random online game versus with playing with other creators, playing with other stream hosts and guests and whatnot. And you're going to have that core set of decks that you're probably going to gravitate towards, because I know I do, versus some of those decks which they were built specifically for the content meta. And once you go outside of that meta, you're probably just never going to hear from them again.
It's possible. I think I want to keep them around. I also have commander deck hoarding tendencies, so I don't really like to take anything apart. So I do like having plenty of options so that in the future, if someone wants to see a deck that I haven't played in a while, I can just go upstairs and grab it.
you don't have to spend like the 2 hours before stream or after work putting it back together from the box.
I don't. I certainly have a box that is full of they're like one of those 1,000 card boxes that are called Commander Shells, where I took out you know, the more staple cards or cards that are more expensive that fit into a variety of strategies, and the core of the deck is still sitting there. You know, rest in peace, my Estrid deck. Rest in peace, my, you know, Xava Bloodwitch deck. Or you know, so those decks, they're still there. But yes, I tend to not take most of my decks apart, and I just continue to build until I will have a collection that does not fit into my game room.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't like tearing decks apart either, but I definitely have quite a few decks that just kind of sit there. They're shunted to some of the back boxes. I don't play them much for a variety of reasons, but typically because it's really hard to find a game group who is willing to put up with some of the stuff that I've built. They were, like I said, they were built for a specific reason, for a specific purpose, and outside of that, there's no context. They just don't really scratch that itch for your opponents, and that's definitely, I think, from the content creator side of this. I mean, we spent all this episode kind of talking about how we play differently, but also just, you know, kind of choosing what decks we want to even put out there too. This is a conscious decision we're making. We have to think about so many different things. To just even going into that Rule Zero, is you have to know your decks and what they're going to do enough to be able to competently talk about them. And you know that not everything's going to be a good matchup, but on the other hand, I, at least personally, I definitely try to think about what decks I'm grabbing before I even get to Rule Zero, because it's a combination of I want to play this deck, but also I want something that will look really interesting on stream. And you kind of have to think about that when you're going through your collection, when you have so many decks like I do, that sometimes decks just don't strike that particular itch, and they just get left behind. Even though you're not tearing them apart, they just kind of gather dust over time.
I agree. That is absolutely true. I have built decks for themed streams that I don't pull out regularly because
I tend to immediately take those decks apart after the stream.
For themed streams?
I'll do one-offs all the time, but I won't keep them together.
Yeah. I still have some of mine together, you know? I've got budget decks, and, you know, this is a deck with all of the cards in this deck. Every creature has their knees are bent. I've done art theme streams, so they certainly do. I agree. They might not be in the forefront. They might not get played very often. But one day, it'll be the perfect deck for whatever pot it is I'm looking to play in.
One day there will be a bees and knees
stream. Exactly, when the bees. I will be ready.
Sounds like the perfect opportunity for me to bring my whiteboarder deck out, dust it off a little bit, and play it again.
Right?
Yeah, because that deck is ridiculously weird. It's like super old cards, super janky things that, you know, were last played in like 2000, year 2000. And it's a great deck. I enjoy it, but again, it's not going to hold up against virtually any deck out there, let's be honest here. So it sticks around because it's funny, but I don't really ever play it because, you know, most people don't want to see me playing just white border cards where, you know, the removal was not good by today's standards. So yeah, things to think about when you build so many decks. So anyway, I want to thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk with me today about this. It's been awesome having both of you. It's been awesome just talking about this content creator meta that we always just discuss, but we don't really dive into it as much as we want to. So it was great to be able to just have this conversation, really just be able to get some of this off my chest, honestly.
This was great. Thank you so much for having me back on. I was very excited.
I enjoy getting to talk to both of you. I don't get to talk to Andy that often because we're always so busy. So I'm appreciative that I could reunite with my long lost friend.
Exactly.
So thanks for getting this together, MJ. I appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for both of you quickly jumping on, signing on for this conversation. Because honestly, I could have just talked about this from my own perspective. But again, people are not listening to my show to just hear me talk to the void here. They want to hear engaging conversation, just like how we have the content creator meta for engaging gameplay. I feel like these collaboration episodes are very engaging just for the discussion, too. So I feel like it checks off all the boxes for just good creator content. So thanks again. And I'm going to go in the same order here as we started off the show. So Andy, you are the host of who are one of the hosts of the Guardian Project podcast, and you also have a game stream that you guys just restarted. Let's just go over, talk about your links again, and make sure the people out there who have been listening to this episode so and have enjoyed it so much can find your content.
All right. Yes, I am one half of the Guardian Project podcast, a weekly Magic the Gathering podcast that talks about all things Magic the Gathering, but mostly Commander. You can find us anywhere where you listen to podcasts. We're also on Twitter at Guardian Pod, and you can check out our website, guardianprojectpodcast.com. And then you can find us on Twitch every other Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern. Right now, we are looking to get back to weekly in the next couple of months here. And that is twitch.tv/Guardian Project Podcast. And then if you want to chat with me, I'm very active on social media. I'm on Twitter at Andy Flory. So message me and let's chat about magic.
Mm-hmm. And EK, where can people again find your work?
Go subscribe to Casual Magic with Shivan Bhatt on YouTube and download his podcast anywhere you like to listen to your podcast and coolstuffinc.com.
All right. Short and sweet. I like that. That's great.
And I have edited that segment dozens of times at this point, so I have got it down.
Nice. I mean, that is like the perfect elevator pitch right there. Yeah, it's great. It takes a long time to be able to get there, but yeah, once you have that honed in, it's just chef's kiss from there. All right. And if you want to hear any of the back catalog of the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can find that on the usual podcast outlets. It's your Google, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, MTG Cast. And there's just so many of them. I never remember all their names. But if it's a major podcast outlet, you can probably find this podcast on there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. If you see the happy looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. I'd like to utilize this opportunity again to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who supported me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So another huge thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And this has been another production of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.